This is the Lou Rockwell Show.
What's great to have as our guest this morning, Paul Armentano. Paul is Deputy Director of NORML, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws. He contributes frequently to a lot of web journals and physical publications, Ultranet, Huffington Post, and of course he's a columnist for LouRockwell.com. Take a look at his archive on drug issues. And Paul, I think the whole drug war is an atrocity of the worst sort. When I think of all the horrific things that have been done by the federal government, how many hundreds of thousands of innocents they've put into prison, the lives they destroyed. But every once in a while, there seems like there's just a bright glimmer of hope and a light at the end of the tunnel, we might almost say. And it seems to me that in this recent election, we actually had some good news. Not very often that good news comes from elections, but maybe this was an exception.
You know, in many cases it was, and it sort of went under the radar screen. When it came to state and local initiatives at the ballot box, in 10 out of 11 instances of voters in this past election voted to reform their state or local laws in such a way that mandated that adults who used marijuana, whether it was for recreational purposes or for medicinal purposes, would not face prosecution, arrest, and jail. And in fact, in the only initiative where voters did not elect to make such reforms, the bill was actually much broader and talked about many different aspects of prison reform in general. And frankly, that's why it failed. Had it just been a narrow issue regarding should we put nonviolent marijuana offenders or nonviolent drug offenders in jail, I think that probably would have passed as well.
Well, it's thrilling. And what's your prediction for the future? I mean, is there, you know, for example, where you have a new administration, any sign that they might be slightly less draconian than the Bush regime?
You know, I think Obama gets this issue from the standpoint that he understands the use of illicit substances ought to be dealt with as a public health issue rather than a criminal issue. Whether he will in any way impact public policy so that America's federal and state laws delineate between, you know, drug use as a health issue versus a criminal issue, I really can't say. I'd like to think he would use some of his political clout to do so, but I deep down don't really believe that this is a high priority issue for him.
Also, in some sense, the entire state is on the payroll on this question. I mean, whether it's the local sheriffs or the guys in the narcotics squad or the customs service or the DEA. I mean, there are a whole lot of people making a whole lot of money on the corruption angle from the drug war. So I guess that's one reason that they don't want to legalize. And then, of course, we have the probable CIA involvement and other black ops by the government involving drugs for a very long time. But tell us a little bit about the history of marijuana illegalization. When did that begin? Obviously, there was a time in this country when it wasn't illegal.
Sure, sure. It was a long time ago, though. So, you know, for many people, all they've ever known is marijuana being an illicit drug. But, you know, in 1937, the federal government passed at that time a law known as the Marijuana Tax Act, and that technically made it illegal for one to possess marijuana without possessing and having paid a government tax on it. And because the federal government never issued the tax stamps that one would need to comply with the law, it in fact made marijuana illegal. What many people, however, tend to forget is that the federal government was really just following the lead from the states at that time. Virtually every state in the United States had already made marijuana illicit prior to the federal government making it federally prohibited in 1937. But the reason why marijuana remains an illicit drug today is because it is classified under federal law as a Schedule I prohibited substance under the Controlled Substances Act of 1970. And that's really a story in and of itself as well. Under the CSA in 1970, marijuana originally was not classified as a Schedule I drug. It was only temporarily place there until there could be a presidential review, and that review was known as the Schaefer Commission, which was published in 1972. And that commission, this presidentially appointed commission, recommended to Congress that the possession and nonprofit transactions and sale of marijuana should not be a federal offense, and in fact, marijuana should not be a Schedule I drug. Unfortunately, Congress and President Nixon at that time ignored the findings of that report, and marijuana has remained in Schedule I all this time, even though it was never meant to be there in the first place.
You know, as a libertarian, I actually don't think that this argument that I'm about to make should have any effect on legalization, since I agree with Mises that the adult ought to be able to ingest any substance that he or she wants. But isn't it clear that marijuana helps a lot of very sick people, whether it's people with AIDS or people with cancer? I know Ron Paul, who's been a heroic opponent of the drug war in Congress, says from his own experience as a physician, he's seen how it does help people. And Nietzsche famously described the state as a cold, cruel monster. The idea that these people would keep a drug that can help somebody dying of a horrible disease away from them and, in fact, threaten to jail them for the use of this drug, what a moral outrage.
You know, it really is. And what we've discovered in the past, really only in the past decade, is that marijuana or the compounds in marijuana, they have therapeutic utility that goes well beyond symptomatic relief. And I think this is a really important delineation that we need to make. I think many people out there understand that someone's suffering from cancer and they're undergoing chemotherapy treatment and they're suffering from nausea, that marijuana can temporarily alleviate the nausea that they are experiencing. I think most Americans understand that someone is in the final stages of their life and they're in pain. They should be able to use cannabis as a way to treat that pain. But the much larger and, in my mind, much more significant issue that has we've been discovering over the past few years is that compounds in marijuana seem to have the potential to provide curative relief in certain families of diseases. And what I mean by that is that, in fact, somebody can be suffering from multiple sclerosis. And there are now long-term clinical trials that indicate if a person is taking a medicine based on marijuana over a significant period of time, that disease does not progress the way it otherwise would were they not taking marijuana or were they simply taking standard medications. Marijuana seems to halt the progression of certain neurodegenerative diseases and autoimmune diseases like Alzheimer's, like multiple sclerosis, like Lou Gehrig's disease. And that, to me, is really the issue we need to be talking about when we're talking about medical marijuana. We've moved from the notion that this is just one of many medications that could potentially provide symptomatic relief. We've moved from that, we've progressed from that, and now we're talking about a potential medication that can possibly do things that no standard treatments can do. Right now, if someone's suffering from MS, they're given one medication to treat one symptom of the disease, like spasticity. They're given a separate medication to help them sleep. They're given a third medication to treat incontinence. But they're given no medication to treat the underlying condition. And there's ample evidence now emerging that compounds in marijuana can, in fact, do this, yet we're withholding the medication from people and we're prosecuting them and threatening them with jail if they dare to use this medication that the federal government, for whatever reason, has deemed they should not use.
Paul, what's your guess as to why they feel so strongly against marijuana? I mean, I know that obviously there are people within the police apparatus of the state that just enjoy putting their jackboot on your face. I mean, that there are those types. But how does somebody who's not entirely a moral monster, what exactly is the justification for outlawing this substance?
Well, you know, the justifications that were used when the substance was originally outlawed, people in power now laugh at those. But, of course, they weren't so funny at the time. And in 1937, the congressional testimony was that if you used marijuana, it made you crazy and it killed you. Well, we can laugh at that to some degree now, but how is that any crazier than politicians today saying things like, well, if someone uses marijuana, they're inevitably going to use cocaine and heroin, which is generally the standard argument that politicians today use for keeping marijuana prohibited. Even, as I said, prohibited from, you know, seriously ill patients who could use this under the supervision of their physician. And certainly you did hit the nail on the head when you talked about law enforcement. We just, as we said earlier, had an election, and in two states, in Michigan and in Massachusetts, voters overwhelmingly approved ballot initiatives. In the case of Massachusetts, they approved a law that says that an adult can use up to an ounce of marijuana and not face arrest and not face incarceration for that. And in Michigan, the voters passed a law that said an individual who's using marijuana under their doctor's supervision can possess and grow marijuana for their own medical benefit. In both of these states, the largest outcry against these initiatives came from law enforcement. They came from the district attorneys. They came from the beat cops. They came from the local sheriffs. These were the individuals who were trying to scare voters into voting down these proposals. Almost exclusively, that is where the opposition lied.
Well, and I guess in California, when you mentioned the one proposition that was defeated, I'm told it was the prison union workers. I mean, these very, very overpaid prison guards in California, the vast prison apparatus of California, who were the key reason that there were a bunch of hate ads put on at the last minute to defeat that proposition.
That's true. There was $3 million raised on the No on Prop 5 campaign in California. And as I referenced earlier, Proposition 5 was a very broad proposal that would have appropriated a certain amount of state funding to pay for diversion instead of treatment for certain nonviolent offenders. It went well beyond this issue of just marijuana law reform. But yes, of the $3 million that was raised, $2 million of it came from the Prison Guards Union. And much of the difference, ironically, came from the California Beer and Beverage Association.
Oh-ho.
So, you know, think of that as you will. But certainly some people can connect the dots there as well.
Well, Paul Armentano, thanks so much for coming on with us today. And I should mention one other qualification about Paul. His dad is the great Austrian economist Dom Armentano. So we got to do a podcast with him at some point as well.
I'm sure he'd love to do it.
But it's sure great to have you on. And thanks for all the good work you're doing. Take a look at his archive at lourockwell.com and look for his articles at Alternet and Huffington Post and many other places. And Paul, thanks a million.
Thank you, Lou. Great to be here.
You've been listening to The Lou Rockwell Show. Produced by LouRockwell.com, the best-read libertarian website in the world. If you'd like to advertise on this podcast or on the website, email advertise@LouRockwell.com. And thanks for listening.